some people still come back. Before I go on to the update, I want to make one comment. I didn't mention anything about the humorphics. But there's just, there's precisely one remark which is worth making. Clearly, so a dichomorphism, if I have this two manifold sigma, I'm just going to worry about dichomorphisms and sigma. A dichomorphism takes me from points in the manifold to points in the manifold. A basic fact about dichomorphisms is that they're generated by vector fields. Which is to say, if I have some one parameter family of dichomorphisms, phi u, then if I want to know, I take phi u on a function, and I take d by d u, that's the same thing as a vector field acting on a function for vi del I acting on a function. So in that sense, the dichomorphisms are generated by vector fields. Have you seen that before? Okay. And acting on tensors of various kinds, the action of the dichomorphism taking a derivative gives me a Lie derivative. So if I want to know the variation under the action of a dichomorphism of, say, the vector potential, say, I in space, that's the Lie derivative of V of A. And in the case of a one form, that is VI, so let's give this guy the J, DJ, del J, sorry, AI plus AI, AJ, del I, DJ, which is the Lie derivative. And similarly, on a vector field, del V on W, say K, is the commutator of V and K. Right, V and W. I'm getting sloppy here. Which is Vj del W K del Xj minus the reverse. Okay. Now, what's interesting is that if I compare the action of a dichomorphism to a gauge transformation, then
in the bottom of the derivative, second time.
Thank you. Is that okay? Now, there's a relation. I'm doing this without having this part I didn't prepare, but I think it's worth saying, so let me get it right. Let's compare the gauge transformation, lambda A, which is del I lambda, and now, notice something. If I make a gauge transformation, I can imagine making a gauge transformation with the gauge function. Now everybody's here, okay? Right. So supposing I have a vector field, and I consider the function of the contraction of the vector field with A. And I can think of making the gauge transformation by that lambda on A, which is del I of the combination of V contracted with A. And so that looks like VK del I AK plus AK del I VK. And notice that that's almost the lead derivative except for switching of these two indices. So this is equal to the lead derivative of V on A I plus a term, which is VK, actually minus a term, which is VK F I K. And that's the identity I was looking for. So what this identity tells you is that if I have a one form and I make and I transform it under a diffeomorphism by taking its lead derivative, and I subtract off a term proportional to the field strength, I get a gauge transformation. And what that means is that when F is zero, if I have a constraint that says F is zero, I can't tell the difference between the gauge transformation and the diffeomorphism. And this is an identity that will become useful later. So another way to say this is that if I'm on the surface where F equals zero, and I have a gauge invariant quantity, it's also diffeomorphism invariant. So when F equals zero, gauge transformations and diffeomorphisms in the sense here are equivalent to each other. And I'm going to use that as we talk about the F theory. But in the presence case, see what's interesting in this theory, if we go back to the definition of the Abelian science theory, is that it is diffeomorphism invariant. If I go back to its action, which I think was here, A with dA, that's clearly, it's an integral of an invariant free form, so it's clearly diffeomorphism invariant. So how come generators of the diffeomorphisms did not turn up when we analyzed what the constraints gave us and what the gauge symmetries gave us? How come we didn't get some constraints, since we've seen that constraints can generate gauge invariances? How come we didn't see any evidence of the diffeomorphism invariance here? And the answer is that for this theory, we can't tell that we can't separate out the effect of diffeomorphism from the effect of gauge transformation. Now, it's very trivial here. When we go to the non-Abelian case, the same thing will be true, but it will be slightly less trivial. Yes?
Would you mind that thing to be erased in the back?
Which thing?
No, the piece of that thing.
Is this better?
Yeah, no, thank you.
Okay.
No, this is all.
Okay. Any questions? So I'm going to go on to the F theory. And I need to do one thing which will... Yes?
If you started the Maxwell.
Yes.
And then impose that, I think, for the vehicle.
Yes.
Would you just get the same?
No. So a question you're asking, say classically or quantum mechanically. So let's say classically. So if I started with Maxwell theory 2+1, classically, and I just imposed F equals 0 everywhere. Okay. Also E?
Yeah.
Okay.
The 4, the 3.
The 3, the 2, yeah. So that's also E.
Yeah.
Well, sure, then the space of solutions is the same as the space of solutions.
Yeah.
But the Poisson brackets are different.
So if you want to get this, I can know how to do that.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the parallel between the Newtonian mechanics and the Hebrew model that we talked about last time.
So yeah.
And you restrict yourself to energy for zero configuration, you gain one, economicization, time economicization.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, very good. Yeah.
So there's a parallel, but it's just a mechanism.
I think it's just that. It's just too simple. Okay. Now, what I'm going to do, which we'll bore the experts a little bit for 5 minutes, is talk about SG2 now that we have engaged brain. So I hope that's okay. And some of the students say that you've heard this thing under the guise of a principal fiber bundle. Okay. So first let me just define my SG2 algebra. So my SG2 algebra is I have 3 generators. JA, JB, I have an algebra. Yeah, come back in 10 minutes. JC, where again epsilon ABC is totally anti-symmetric and epsilon, say 1, 2, 3 is equal to 1. So these are like the angular momentum generators in quantum mechanics. And we're going to be interested in the particular two-dimensional representation, although I will later be interested in other representations, where the JIs are represented by the Pauli matrices. And just to write them once, sigma 1 is 0, 1, 0, 1. Sigma 2 is 0, minus 9, I, 0. And sigma 3 is 1, 0, 0, minus 1. So these guys form an algebra. And I can take linear combinations of them, which I call the SG2 algebra. Okay? You smile. Is it too simple? It's good? Okay. So these form an algebra. Now I want to consider one-form fields just the same way as before. Oh, so I should give this thing, this algebra, a name. So how about we call it A? So the algebra consists of all things of the form of the sum of A, Pauli matrices times some complex number CA, for those are complex numbers. Yes. Thank you. And there are too many A's around. Let me call this script A. Okay. So now I have a one-form value in the algebra. That means, so first of all, let me think, I could have a function valued in the algebra. For every point on the manifold, I have an element of this algebra, which lives in this three-dimensional vector space. It's the three-dimensional vector space of Hermitian trace-free 2x2 tensors. And I can also have a one-form valued in the algebra. If you like, that means if I have a vector field, V, then VA contracted with A is a function in the algebra. So I'm going to increase the complexity just a little bit. And now, Let me just see, I don't want to do anything more complex, okay, anything more complex than I mean. So, because we now invent a notion of gauge transformations, and this can be motivated, so I'm just going to invent it, where we invent a transformation law, delta A, which is the ordinary, so I have some function f value in the algebra. So that means f is equal to some f, a, using the space is sigma a. And also, I didn't write it, but the a's, and boy, I have a notation problem. I'm just going to get screwed. Capital letters. Okay? Capital I, J, and K. So my function and A are also valued in the algebra. In the algebra, like that. And now I know the algebra of the sigmas, so I can compute things. The gauge transformation looks like the ordinary gauge transformation, but then there's a term which is the commutator of A with F. Okay. So this is in the algebra, this is in the algebra, the commutator is in the algebra because it's a good algebra. The F now gains another term, and so the F now looks like dA, AB, value in the algebra, plus the commutator of two A's, which is value in the algebra. And what that does for us is that, and this is something you can check, if I now compute the gauge transformation property of F, given the gauge transformation property of the A, then that becomes the commutator of F and the A. So whereas the A transforms with the derivative of the function, the F transforms homogeneously with no derivative. So there still is the thing that because there's a D here, the derivatives of, and there's a D here, the derivatives cancel out. Okay. And so we call this SU2 non-abelian A fields. And if I can stretch you just a little bit, once you have the concept, you can extend it to any Lie algebra, where now the algebra is any Lie algebra you like. But for today, at least, we're just going to do SU2. So then we may behave like particle physicists a long time ago. When there was a time when particle physicists knew that the only group that they knew was SU2. And I think that's almost true of people in quantum gravity, unfortunately. Okay. So, with this additional structure, we can do some more things. I'm going to skip for the moment. No, let me just say the facts about gang Mills theory. Let me not skip gang Mills theory. Since we had gang Mills theory here, let me give the key thing as an exercise. Is this really better, this leather thing? So, gang Mills theory is just like Maxwell for this case. For Yang-Mills theory, we take the action, the same minus the fourth, the same FAB, FCB, A to AC, A to BD. But the only thing is that this is now valued in an algebra. It's a product of two things in the algebra. So we take the trace. And there is a rule that says that the trace of sigma I, capital I, sigma capital J, is delta ij, and that's the way I'm going to normalize it. Okay. So another way of saying that is that if We write F as Fi, AB, Pauli matrix, sigma I, to pull out the Pauli matrix. Then this is the same thing, that's minus 1/4. F, AB, I, F, C, D, I, where I now sum over the I's. And this is really worth learning about because this is what the standard model is based on. Now, let me just say the only thing that changes if you now make the Hamiltonian decomposition as before. So if you do it as before, it still is now a pi I, capital I, for the capital I downstairs, which is delta of the action, delta A dot is just the I here before. This is now F zero I. So there is an additional term here, which is the commutator with A zero. And when you make
I think it's just the notation on the second line. Is that kind of an epsilon?
Oh, sigma.
I see, it's sum.
Yeah, sorry. Sigma. Sorry.
No.
Okay.
But you can't think of it. It might be better to lower in the couple of the indices of I.
This here.
No, the big cat.
It might be, and I forgot to put it here.
Yes.
So the only thing that changes, the Hamiltonian, is still the integral of pi squared, only now you have to square on all the indices. And there's a term which is fij squared now on all the indices. And there's still a term which is a0 times g, where g is a constraint, but there's now this additional term. So g, if you like, is valued in Lie algebra as well. So g is now the, and sorry, there's a name for this, which I forgot to write, which is, this is what we call the Cobrain derivative of f, which means we take the derivative and we correct it with the commutator. And so G is the covariant divergence of pi, and it has an extra index, I. So to write it out, it's the ordinary divergence of pi plus the commutator of A with pi. And commutator, and then take out the I part. So since there are three generators, there are three Gauss's laws. These are all constraints, so these are equal to zero. And so it's a little bit more complicated to check the consistency. And the nice thing that you can check is that the Poisson bracket of gi at x, gA at y is delta 3xy times an epsilon ijk times gk at x. So the g's, since there are three G's, we have to worry about their consistency with each other. And their Poisson bracket of any two of them is a third of them. And that means, in terms of Dirac's rules here, that this is what's called the first class algebra, because the constraints under Poisson brackets close. And there's a nice thing here, which is that they mirror the algebra of the SU2 matrices. So that's what's new when you go to the animals theory. Of course, the physics is completely different. There's confinement, there's spontaneous symmetry breaking, there's all these wonderful things which are not in Maxwell theory. But in terms of what we're interested in, those are the basic differences. Okay, question? Okay. I'm going to now introduce this to investigate a theory which has some things in common with Turner-Simons theory and some things which are different from it. So we're going to consider, again, a three-dimensional manifold. To start with. And on this three-manifold, we're going to have a field, we say, valued in SV2. So we have one of these Yang-Mills-type fields, which is a one-form value in SU2. And we're going to have another one, which is a different one-form field, also valued in SU2, which we're going to call E. Okay, so since we haven't met it before, E, for example, can be expanded like this. Oh, sorry, I'm using sigmas in terms of Pauli matrices. So there are nine, since there are three SU2 matrices, there are nine A's and there are nine B's per point of three-dimensional space. Okay, so that's the setup. There's no metric. I'm going to again take the topology via the form of some compact two-manifold cross time. And now I want to write an action without using a metric, but I have available these fields. And so what am I going to do with them? Well, there is something like Turner-Simons theory that we can write down, but I'm going to skip that for a moment. We'll come back to that. So I'm going to write down an action, which is just the integral. And I'm going to take E wedge the F that I get from here, this F. And I'll trace it, which is the same thing as summing over the Yang-Mills components. So that's equal to the integral of the trace on the whole manifold M, the trace of just E wedge F.
So the F comes from A?
The F comes from A. The F. And it's that. It's everything defined that way. Okay? And later we're going to add some more terms to this, but let's just deal with this for the moment. If I don't notate it, I use the summation convention. But I only use the summation convention for these, the algebra indices. And because there is a metric on the algebra of SU2, so it makes sense to use it. Now, somebody might say to me, why are you using a metric on the algebra of S2, but you don't want to believe in metrics in space? If you were really consistent and background dependent, then you would have no metric on SU2, and it couldn't be SU2, it would have to be GL2, which is just the algebra of general linear transformations, and that doesn't deserve any metric. And you could yell at me for not doing that, and maybe we'll do that one of these days. And but for the moment, I'm employing some structure, which is the structure of SU2. Okay. So, I hope it's not getting too boring. We're going to play the same game. I'm going to skip a little bit more steps, since we've developed various combinations of steps. But we're going to follow Dirac. It's a little bit more intricate. So let me first write out the action. And I'm leaving it this way, because there are some more terms we might come back and add. We will if we have time. But for the moment, I'm ignoring them. So the action, just to write it out explicitly, is epsilon ABC EA del B AC tied up to the gauge indices, plus, and the result of the commutator here is a term. Here, another way to write FABI is del A ABI plus epsilon IJK. And I let myself raise and lower the algebra indices because there is a metric, as I said, on the algebra, HA, ABK. So,
maybe you could write the minus DB.
So you're right, but I can anti-symmetrize and multiply by 2. Thank you. Here there's just automatically a 2 because this is anti-symmetrized already. And here there's an epsilon I J K A B J A C K. Okay? So I have to worry about where there are time components, because I'm going to be finding out the canonical momenta. Just like before, one of these is time, one of these three is time, and the other two are space. So let's first consider the case where A is time. So then we get B and C are spatial indices, which I call J and K. And it says E0, I times FJK, I. So some things are still true. There's still only one component of a magnetic field. We're in two dimensions. But that magnetic field has actually three functions in it because of the algebra. So I have that. And then the time, however, could be in here or in here. But because it's anti-symmetric, there's just two of those. So I get EI, and now I have F0K, and I can write F0K as D0, covariant derivative of A, JKI. So that's being careful about everybody. And it's quite a bit more complicated than the two theories that we did before, but we should be able to make our way through it. Okay? So let's find the canonical momenta. First, as before, pi 0, the derivative of s with respect to a dot 0 is still 0. So pi 0 is a constraint. And pi I, which is the derivative. Now look at what's happening here. E, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Notice if I look for the time derivative of A, it's just here, because inside the covariant derivative is a del 0, which is the time derivative, AK, and that's the only place there's a time derivative. So the time derivative, so the momenta I, which is the derivative of the time derivative A dot I, just picks up the E. So this is a twice epsilon ij ej, and there's still the Yang notes sign for the algebra index here. So the E is the conjugate momenta of the connection for the Yang notes field A for the spatial parts. And this is also a constraint. So if, as before, we're listing constraints, so our constraints are pi 0 equals 0 as before. We have these constraints, I'll call them the same thing, pi, but there's three of them for each little I, for the big I, which is pi i minus epsilon ij ej I 0. I think that, do I have that right?
Two. The camera wires upstairs. Downstairs.
No. This has to be upstairs because we took the derivative by something downstairs. So I think that's right. Okay. And notice the little epsilon does a nice thing for you, because the momenta has to transform like always, like a vector density. And the little epsilon, two-dimensional epsilon, is taking into account the density weight for you.
Yes, sorry. I suppose maybe it's a good question. How do you see that the action is gauging?
How do you see? Well, I haven't told you yet how E transforms. So let me tell you. Thank you. Yes, let me tell you that under the gauge transformations, delta E A goes like minus the commutator of F with E A.
So it transforms in the reverse way to F.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks for mentioning that. Okay. Then there are objects which are the canonical momenta associated with the E, but there is no time derivative of the E. So let me call those, I don't know what to call them, rho. I think I have all of them, AI, which is the variation of the action by E dot, AI, which is 0, and those are also constraints. So these are all our primary constraints. So E has no time derivatives whatsoever. A has time derivatives for the spatial part and not for the time part. And E actually are the momenta for the A. The spatial parts of the E's are the momenta for the spatial parts of the A's. Okay? We then form the Hamiltonian. The Hamiltonian as before. Then now I'm just sketching. There's a part which is pi a dot I. And it's just, we keep the indices in SC2 along for the ride. Just we have before pi 0 a dot 0 I. We have rho e dot, let me not fill out the indices, it's just all the indices, minus the Lagrangian. And what do we get? Well, much as before, what happens is the following. The time derivative terms cancel. So there are no terms in time derivatives, there are no terms quadratic in the primes. As before, we get this. So we get a term which is e0 f, and there's just one f, so I'll just call it f. From here, from the incomplete cancellation of the time derivative, there is the term which is the a0 commutator here, and the time derivative, and what that gives altogether is something that looks like a0i times the gi, which is the same g that I wrote in the context of Yang-Mills theory. So this is something you can check, where g is, it's not the same. Sorry. If I write the g the way it is here, it's dE, it's a two form, and it's dE plus commutator of E and A as two forms. If I use the relationship between E and pi, then this becomes the covariant divergence of pi, which we had as in Yang-Mills theory. But maybe I'll distinguish, let me call this G, what should I call it? G hat, and that's the object which is a two form, and then it's this object here. And this is integral d2f. And then there's the term in pi 0, a dot, and then the term in rho, e dot, which don't get canceled off. Okay. So we're building up much the same way we did before. The smart thing to do is to solve for these and eliminate the spatial e's with respect to the pi's. So I'm going to solve those. In that case, the g becomes just the Gauss's law from Yang-Mills theory. I have left an e0, which is here, and I have this, which is now the g from Yang-Mills theory. So if I can sort of disappear that, can you stand up to have that disappear for a moment? So the theory now consists of AI, A0, I, E0, I, and pi, I, each of them with the extra indices corresponding to BSU2. The Poisson bracket is now AI, just like Yang-Mills theory, IJ, which I think I did write, but it was just like we had for Maxwell, except there's an additional capital delta IJ for the components in the Lie algebra, delta 2 from X and Y. And the Hamiltonian is the integral on the spatial manifold. And there's now the term E0i in F and a term A0i in Gauss's law. And that's the fear. Any questions? I feel people are getting tired, and maybe I'm just getting tired. So I'll go a bit, just a bit longer with the basic properties, and then we'll stop for the night. We now play the game, so we got rid of these constraints, we got rid of these constraints, we got rid of these, and we got rid of the pi zero, no, sorry, sorry. I am getting tired, I'm saying things which are dumb. We got rid of those constraints. We now have to check pi zero dot, and pi zero dot, we've done this several times before, pi zero dot, the only thing that the Poisson bracket of pi zero with the Hamiltonian can pick up is the a zero. So pi zero dot implies a new constraint, which is that the Gauss's law is equal to zero. Rho, which is the constant momentum for the e's, can just pick up this. So rho dot, well, this is what I should have said. Solving this, no, that's fine. Rho zero gives us the f's, which is zero. So we have six constraints. The g is one per point, and the f is one per point. And we have, again, a Hamiltonian, which is of the form from the Barber-Bertoni theory, which is it's just proportional to the sum of constraints. But we have six constraints. We have the g's, and we have the f's. Okay? Now, anybody have any idea, interpretation, questions, comments? The G, now we have to check the consistency again. And so we have to check G dot, which is the commutator of G with the Hamiltonian. And we have to check F dot, which is the commutator of the S with the Hamiltonian. Now clearly, what matters is that when, say, the G comes in, the G commutating with the G, or the G commutating with the F, because the E0 and the A0 are just about multipliers. So if altogether the F's and the G's form a closed algebra, we're done. So one just has to check that, and I told you what the algebra was, so let me just mention what the algebra is. The gi of x with the gj of y is delta 2 xy epsilon ij k of gk. And the g's with the f's are the same with the epsilon ij k of the S, and the only thing left is the F's with the F's. Okay, does anybody know what the F's with the F's is? Okay, everybody must be tired, because that's easy. Because the F's just depend on the A's, and the A's, in this case, is not my transitive theory. The A's commute with each other. So this is zero. Okay. So we have an algebra here in which we have Vs that have an algebra of rotation generators in three-dimensional space. The Fs rotate the same way, i.e. they transform as vectors in three-dimensional space, and the Fs commute with each other. So what algebra is this? Well, it's what's called the Euclidean algebra in three dimensions. It's the algebra of, if the Fs are translations and the Gs are rotations, this is like the algebra of translations and rotations in three-dimensional space. So this is just the 3D Euclidean algebra. If there were, if the group, well, let me just leave it there. 3D Euclidean algebra. Okay. So, anybody have any guess as to what this theory is? So that's it. There are no more constraints. That's theory has six constraints. Now, any guesses? Okay. So what you're looking at is general relativity in three space-time dimensions. And with the Euclidean signature, which is why that turns out to be the Euclidean group. And I will stop there, and next time my job is to teach you more about this theory, and work out everything we worked out before. And secondly, to explain to you why that is general relativity in 2 plus 1 dimensions. Any questions? Okay. And if somebody wants to play with it, it's not too hard to show that it has some property which is similar to the properties we discussed of Schoen-Simons theory, for example, the curvatures are zero. But in addition, there are these other quantities which are zero. So it's more sophisticated than Schoen-Simons theory. But on the other hand, it is a pretty trivial theory. So we did, today we did, I hope, oh my God, I forgot to put this up.
Oh well, okay.
So maybe you picked it up anyway. Okay. Question, everybody's looking exhausted.